Glad you came up to sit with you.
I love it. I'd like to be able to
let's do
see who this person is.
It's my bill. One of the you pointed out one of the big things, and obviously council didn't do a very good job of drafting the bill. I had toyed with the notion of just saying that you have to allow specifically the same things as California allows. You have to, if the person's a paralegal for X number of years and does X amount of reading under the supervision of a lawyer who signs affidavits, and that would, et cetera, et cetera. But then I thought that, well, we should in Oregon be allowed to prescribe our own alternative means. And obviously this bill, they could say you have to spend 100 years working in a law office, and by the time you do that, you're dead. If they wanted to, but that's the intent is to give them a lot of to point them in a direction and give them a lot of latitude. And
I appreciate that,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I almost hesitate to do anything that would create more attorneys. we need more attorneys, more pizza parlors. No offense to the bar.
More video
stories. No, I was just going to say, you know, as the only layperson, non-lawyer, I should say, on this committee, frankly, and I have some things to learn about this, but I am concerned about the bill and not having tests and so forth, just because when I turn to an attorney, it's because I need one, and I like the thought that they've gone through this rigorous battery of education and testing and have educated themselves not in a perhaps a narrow field to pass an exam or something like that, but have had education in a broad range of things and have gone through this rigorous process. And so as a non-lawyer, I like the fact that I know that everyone I come in contact with has done a certain amount of things. Now, some of the California ideas might be pretty good, but the bill as it's written just would concern me in that respect.
Thank you very much, Representative Bryan. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If and when we get into amending, I'll give the full speech. But to some of the concerns of Representative Bryan and testing and so forth, I think it's interesting to note, I think most of the lawyers would agree, that the bar exam has no relationship at all to the practice of law. It's just a time pressure cram test. There's special schools devised just to teach you how to pass the bar exam. A few weeks ago, I think in the For the Record, the monthly newspaper that's sent out by the bar, they were advertising for people to take on the job of bar examiners. You have to understand that these are not people who know how to grade papers. They go over and send in some resort setting, and for the first time in their lives, for many of them, determine what the fate of particular applicants is going to be, whereas I would say that you are tested in law school for 3 years, and you are graded by people who understand whether or not you have some competence in the subject matter you've been dealing with for the past 9 months, rather than trying to put something forward in 30 minutes on an essay and simply write an almost incoherent group of sentences trying to spot certain issues on a question. It's not a good test, and really it's, I think just the fact that you put up some sign on your wall that says that, it gives comfort to some people walking in, and maybe you're one of them, but it shouldn't. And I think what we do when we license people in this state, we do tend to breed some fairly relaxed consumers, who I think, if that thing wasn't on the wall, might be encouraged to ask them questions about what are your competencies in this particular area? What is your background? Have you handled this before? Maybe we could actually cause some people to be interested in the quality of the person they're seeking to do their counseling.
I might add up real quick on that. I think the point of the Representative Miller's trying to make is that you sure don't learn how to practice law in law school. Maybe you learned something there. I'm not sure what it was that I learned, but I sure didn't learn how to practice law there.
Mr. Chairman.
Nor in the bar exam.
If I may, Representative Dwyer, Springfield again. In regards to Representative Miller's contention or that the graduation from law school is prima facie of your ability, quite a percentage of the people that graduate don't pass the bar, and I understand for a lot of reasons. I also understand that there are bar courses that you can take. Some people don't take them initially, and they fail, and then they cram, and they pass. And I would maintain that conceivably you could not go to law school and take a bar course and pass the bar. I mean, if you would be allowed to take the bar, I can probably the percentages wouldn't be much different from that from law school. I don't know. It'd be my contention. I've seen some of the bar courses, and they're pretty comprehensive in that they condition you for the questions that the bar asks, the kinds of questions and subject matter. This gives the person an alternative. Maybe we need a system that says to test for the ability of those people that didn't graduate an accredited law school. If you want to assume that it's prima facie your ability, I don't have any objection with that. What I want to do is expand the process to allow those people that don't want to go to the traditional way. What we're talking about is we're talking about trying to train not more lawyers, Representative Bryan, but competent attorneys that have experiences that are not only gained in law school, that may be of different age classes and whatnot, and have life experience that far exceed anything that you would ever learn in law school, but as a result of the system that we have now are precluded to becoming lawyers. Now, I have no intention to becoming a lawyer, so this is not going to benefit me. Now, in regards to why this bill is maybe defective in its drafting, it was drafted by a lawyer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Dwyer. Is there anybody else here to testify on House Bill 3335?
Mr. Chair? I don't know what the Chair's intent is, but I'm very serious about saying that before I can support the bill or even support an amendment that does the same thing as the bill does that I signed on to, in addition to the State Court Administrator and the Bar, I neglected to mention before, I need to get input from the Private Schools Association about what they would do in response to this kind of legislation, because I'm uncomfortable. Well, we're getting ready to do two things: saying we're going to do away with the bar exam, and also say you're going to do away with the requirement that you go to law school before you become a lawyer. And so, I mean that.
Mr. Chairman,
you know, with that in mind. It's, I just caution us to go very carefully.
Clark, pretty soon we could just have the little hot dog stand set up where they hand those things. Just bring your check binder and just hand those things out. Representative Mannix.
Well, I would concur with Representative Clark's concerns that we would want to work over something before we move ahead with it, but I also think that a comprehensive approach to the whole question of admission of attorneys to the bar can be taken. There is plenty of input already available from the Bar Association about the issue of the bar exam and what can be done in terms of a balanced bill to do away with the bar exam for graduates of accredited institutions within the state of Oregon. There's also the potential of saying that those who are not graduates from accredited institutions within the state of Oregon will have to take a bar exam, and that among the qualifications is that you be a graduate from some accredited law school elsewhere, or that you have participated in a particular kind of law reading program. And I think we could probably turn to the statutes of a couple of venerable states, Virginia being one of them, for some guidance on how they've crafted legislation that somehow has done the job for a couple of hundred years. And I'm saying, yes, we probably shouldn't go into a work session on this, if that's what Representative Clark is saying, but I'd like us to take a serious look at blending the two ideas together.
I'd be more than happy to do that and be part of a working group to do that. But I just think I'm committed enough to the idea that I don't want to see it done in a hasty fashion.
I think that at least in the state of California, it's not in the statute. It's the bar itself, which is under the guidance of the Supreme Court, has laid its own rules out of its own accord. But we'd be requiring our Supreme Court to do that. I'd be happy if you'd like to. I don't know if you two gentlemen have the time, but we could try to form a working group. I think we get two extra weeks on this bill since we've heard it before the deadline. We're good until May 1st, and if you'd like, we can try to form a working group. And I think we have somebody from the bar that's here, although she's not too interested in this. But
very interested. She's not very excited.
if that's acceptable to Representative Clark and Representative Mannix, it's okay. Let's we'll give this working group over to Representative Clark and Representative Mannix to work with appropriate parties and try to come back with some good suggestions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have Representative Calori here on a bill, and I'd certainly like to get to that right away. There's no other testimony on House Bill 3335, is there? Okay, we're going to close the work set or the public hearing on House Bill 3335, and we're going to open the public hearing on which House Bill, Ted?
3382. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ted Calori, State Representative from Washington County. As you can see, 3382 is about as simple as any bill ever could come before us. It changes two numbers. The numbers that it changes are the maximums that can be charged for a concealed weapons permit. That is the only change. The justification for that change would just simply be that the costs to the counties for processing these kinds of applications have gone up. I could end there, but let me just cover a couple of other points, and that is that everything else is existing law. However, in that existing law, if I could just point out a couple of things. Number one, line 9 points out that these fees are to be turned over to the county, essentially, and put in general funds. So it's not a matter of raising money for safety, public safety departments. Number two, I would point out that on line 13 and following, it points out that the sheriff is required to submit, ask the applicant to submit to fingerprinting, and that's a part of the reason for the costs, is that that can be have some expense involved in it. There also are on line 16, 17, 18, and 19 some things that show the current requirements of descriptions of serial number and calendar and so forth. The last point that I would make is on line 21, which again points out that these fees are set by the governing body. So I am not asking to have this amount set as an absolute amount, but just simply as an upper limit. Now that you've been so attentive, I'm ready to pass the bill.
Thank you very much for testimony, Representative Calori. Any questions of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I would like to just make one other point, and that is that I am well aware of the fact that this same subject is found in a number of other bills and specifically is found in Representative Katz's bill that's more comprehensive. I would ask that this committee pass this bill and do it with the understanding that the same subject is covered somewhere else. And I think that arrangements can be made to have the other one supersede this if it passes. I think that it's fairly important to the counties to have this particular thing covered. If by any chance Representative Katz's bill has trouble along the way, then this particular subject will not have been covered. And in fact, I would not even have a problem with writing something on here that says that even in anticipation that it could be superseded by hers. But I just think that it's important to have this one done and make sure that it's done cleanly, and so that would be my request.
Thank you very much, Representative Calori. Any questions or comments from the committee? Representative sure. Bryan.
Well, I agree with Representative Calori's comments with, I think, some sort of trigger clause that would that 3470, should it become law, would supersede it. But it's a good insurance situation. If it doesn't, we still get the fees that our locals are telling us are necessary.
Representative Bryan, I think there's somebody else here to testify on this bill. Representative Calori, I appreciate your testimony and was happy to hear your bill today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dave Burks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Burks. I'm sheriff of Lane County, and I'm also representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Office in support of this bill. I would like to echo that I did participate in the creation of House Bill 3470 And in that bill, it's anticipated that the fees would be approximately $50 for the first issuance of the concealed weapons permit. Bearing that in mind, we do support this bill in the event that that bill should not become law. If that bill should become law, we too would support the increase in the fee as required by that legislation because it's based on the workload. And I appreciate the testimony that preceded me here about the workload because, quite frankly, the $10 fee that's currently required does not cover the cost of doing business. I had recently, while working on 3470, the opportunity to poll the state sheriffs. Unfortunately, I didn't get to the right people, and the primary question was how many gun permits were out rather than what was what the actual cost of issuing those permits were. However, three counties I do know, one of which is mine and the other two is listed in the attachments, and I believe that's Douglas County and Clackamas County. Clackamas County estimated their cost would be approximately $30 under the current law, and Douglas County estimated it cost $37.95 under the current law for them to issue the permit. We had a fee study in Lane County in December of 1988 and looked at all fees, one of which was the issuance of gun permits. It was determined at that time that it cost the county $21.22 to issue the permit. It was proposed by the firm that did the study for us that $21 should be the fee that we would charge. Unfortunately, it was limited by state law to $10, so as you can see, we're losing money in the proposition. We would like to support this legislation. I'd be pleased to answer any questions that you might have.
What county are you from again?
Lane County. Eugene is the county seat.
There's a few counties that are apparently already charging more than $10. You have any idea why they're...
Apparently they don't read the state law.
That'd be a good shot at a little class action to make some money off of, I would think. The bill of Speaker Katz would raise it to about $50.
For the initial issuance of the permit, yes.
That would be for a two-year permit instead of...
That's correct.
So they'd be about this, because this one's 15 and 30 and that one's 50, or this one's 25 and 15 and that one's 50 and 30. So they're essentially the same.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was 50 and 25 for House. That's my recollection. I believe that's correct for 3470. So it'd be 50. It's anticipated a $50 fee under House Bill 3470 and a $25 fee for the renewal. And that is a two-year renewal.
I appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Anybody else here testifying this bill? No? State, for the record, I certainly would do everything in my power to support one of Representative Calori's bills, but I'd have 650 people in Jackson County getting their taxes raised, and all of them carry concealed weapons, and that scares me.
With that combination.
It'd be okay as long as I was here, but as soon as I went home, I'd be in a lot of trouble. Okay, let's, having no more discussion on that bill, let's go into public hearing on, are you hearing a particular bill, or, John? Is that the one at your request? We'll go ahead and open the public hearing, and we're going to get some comments from you on that bill. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3322. And we'll begin with Mr. Nichols. I might say before you start, it's not my intention to move this bill today only because it's already addressed in Speaker Katz's bill, and hopefully we'll be looking at all these issues at the same time, but I was more than happy to introduce this bill for you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Nichols. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. This bill was introduced by you at my request. However, subsequent to that time, I became involved with the series of meetings that were held in the Speaker's office that involved not the National Rifle Association, Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, Oregon Chiefs Association, State Police, and Attorney General's Office. That bill is House Bill 3470. We support 3470 and would ask that my bill be put off until after 3470 is acted upon.
Any questions of the committee? Anybody else testify in House Bill 3322? Close the public hearing on House Bill 3322, and we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2513.
Might Margaret Carter call? Or can you give Margaret Carter a call?
Okay, first person we have here is John Bradley from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. This is the drive-by shooting bill that we worked on about a month ago, a couple weeks ago. Yes, Bradley, sir. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Bradley for the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office on this bill. The last time there were several questions, I think Representative Mannix last time asked the question, you know, would this apply to BB guns? And under 166, I had this earlier. The statute talks about firearms, and a firearm is defined, if I can find it again. Defined in the statute as a to paraphrase it is defined as meaning a something that uses black powder and capable of here we go. Firearm is defined in 166.660, sub 4, sub B. It says firearm means a weapon by whatever name known, which is designed to expel a projectile by the action of black powder or smokeless black powder, and which is readily capable of use as a weapon. So I think that's fairly defined in the statute. My concern is that there have been there's been an amendment proposed. And there's been an LC draft of that amendment. Do you have that before you?
Yes.
I'm not sure who proposed that. And what I would say is this, is I think I would like to go through those amendments. We obviously support the 2513, but the amendments, I think, create some problems.
Mr. Bradley, we have another set of amendments also that I think stay on a more limited scope, and the council is going to bring one of those around to you, and
I think I have it.
It's just a quick little one pager.
All right. Well, then what I'd like to do is this: is going down to where they talk about the population in excess of 200,000. I'm against that on policy reasons, but I'm also against it on constitutional reasons. I think if we put that in the statute, it'll apply to Multnomah County, but I would think that there are real serious constitutional questions as a result of that. I know, now I may be wrong, but I don't know of any criminal law in this state that only applies to one county, where you can say that certain conduct in one county is illegal and it's not illegal anyplace else. And I know normally when the legislature wants something to apply to just one county in a civil context, they refer to if it's over 400,000 or over 300,000, it applies to Multnomah County, or if they talk about a particular lake, it will apply to that particular county. But in a criminal law, you have two provisions. You have one, I have not researched this, but because this is the first time I saw this, but you have the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, which I'm more familiar with, and then you have the Equal Privileges and Immunities Clause of the Oregon Constitution, where you're going to treat citizens, as I recall from law school, and some having argued a number of times constitutional questions under equal protection, is that where you have a difference of how you're going to treat citizens in the context of criminal laws, if there's going to be a difference, then the legislature has got to find a rational basis, and I think the term was a rational basis why there should be a difference between one class of citizens and the other. And I think saying just 200,000 needs to be over 200,000, I think it would raise serious constitutional questions. I would also note that there are representatives here from Salem and also Eugene that do not want to limit this to 200,000 people because of the fact that they are starting to see some of the same problems we're seeing in Multnomah County. Furthermore, in a county such as Multnomah...
Yes, Representative
Lennox. I'd like to interrupt you and just point out that as long as we're treating persons similarly situated in a similar fashion, I think we take care of the equal protection argument. And I can state for the record that if you're talking about a certain level of population, you're talking then about urban population or more massive population groupings, and there is a rational basis for this whole legislative scheme in regard to more urbanized areas as opposed to less urbanized areas.
And I would agree with that, Representative Mannix. The only thing I'm saying, but I think 200,000 is too large. I think if you're going to say urban as opposed to rural, I mean, there are areas in Eugene and there are areas in Salem and some of your bigger cities in Oregon that if you look at them, they look just like Portland, Oregon. And I would say this, that if you want to set a limit, I think by defining something as a city, as it is in the original draft, I think that is sufficient. But if you want to set numbers, I would think the numbers would be more closer to, like, say, 10,000. But the problem that I see is that in Multnomah County, what you would be telling people is you can't fire a gun out of your car in Portland, but you can drive out to Gresham. Not that it's all right, but it's not going to be as serious if you start firing your guns in Gresham. I mean, I don't think we want to drive people from Multnomah County and drive them into, you know, Clackamas County and drive them into Washington County to fire their guns in those counties. I think you could set a limit, but I think when you set it at 200,000, I think you, I seriously think you have some constitutional problems with that. The only other thing is I'd just like to say this for the record, where it says in lawful defense of life or property, there's only one time that a person who's not a police officer in Oregon that I know of can use a weapon in defending themselves, and that's under ORS 161.219. That's very specific as to when a deadly physical force can be used. And it says, notwithstanding the provisions of ORS 161.209, a person is not justified in using deadly physical force upon another person unless the person reasonably believes that the other person is, one, committing or attempting to commit a felony involving the use or threatened imminent use of physical force against the person, two, committing or attempting to commit a burglary in a dwelling, or three, using or about to use unlawful deadly physical force against a person. I would ask the committee, just for the record, that if you leave this in lawful defense of life or property, I'm assuming you are referring to ORS 161.219, because that's the only time you can use a weapon against another person in defense of person or property. And it may be that it might easily be amended to say, in the lawful defense of a person is set forth in ORS 161.219. But I would like to make that clear for the legislative history that this is not, I don't believe it's intended to be broader in scope than what the justification provisions are.
Can I just ask a question real quick? Would it be okay if we just put in the, left it as it is, in the lawful defense of life or property, and then just add it on as defined under 161.219,
that's
that would
fine.
Handle? Already.
And as long as the legislative history is clear, that's what's intended for, that's fine.
Representative Mannix?
Well, I was just going to ask the same thing. Cool. This short amendment, this typed version was what you had come up with originally?
No, I don't know where this came from.
Oh, you didn't come up with this one either? Have you come up with anything?
Well, I didn't think we needed to. As I've said, by putting in police officers, and there would be, I would say this, by saying in lawful defense of life or property is probably, it's probably not necessary because the law says when you allege a criminal act, you always say did knowingly and unlawfully do something. Well, the law authorizes you to use certain force in certain instances. If you didn't have that in it, it would still be covered, but if you want to make that clear, that's fine. As far as by police officers and lawful performance of their official duties, I don't have any problems with that. It just means that you give police a little bit broader authority, but not much, and I think it's reasonable.
Mr. Chairman, whose amendments are these?
These amendments are amendments we discussed in the last hearing.
So they're committee amendments?
Well, they were talked about by the committee, and I had counsel draft these up.
All right. I have a question for counsel then. The issue with military personnel within the confines of a military reservation, in light of the fact that we've passed at least one bill allowing the National Guard to be involved in some police operations, that particular line seems to me that it may cause some problems for the National Guard or the militia being involved in police operations and not being able to utilize their weapons in those kind of actions. So,
important to
military personnel in the line of duty?
Well, when authorized, appropriate authorization or whatever it is.
Probably fix that. Does that sound like a good amendment?
I was in the National Guard, and I'd just say police are much better trained than the National Guard. Not taking anything away from the National Guard.
I argued that on the floor. It still passed.
Yeah, but when they're with you on that next drug raid, you better be prepared to train them.
Yeah, and Dan Ford Quayle would have a bone to pick with you about that little statement.
Mr. Chairman? We went in the National Guard for different reasons.
Yes. Representative Mannix.
Since
we'll postpone our recess temporarily.
Mr. Chairman, Diana Godman for the Oregon State Bar. I apologize. I had an appointment with a legislator on the Senate side on a bill that's on the floor tomorrow, and she kept me waiting, and I couldn't get back here in time. I apologize.
Legislators don't do that, do they?
Well, he had real constituents in his office that he wanted to talk to. On House Bill 2259, I agree, I was out of the room for the remarks of the other witness and for your counsel, but I agree that certainly Section 1 of this bill has been rendered unnecessary by your passage of House Bill 2257, also sponsored by the bar, insofar as both Section 1 of 2259 and 2257 both deal with major traffic offenses.
Excuse me, Mr. Bradley, we're revisiting 2259. I'm glad you're here.
And I was out of the room. I didn't have an opportunity to hear Mr. Bradley's comments with regard to Section 2 of the bill, House Bill 2259, as it applies to fish and game offenses, that is, criminal accusations of violations of the fish and game laws. Our concern in 2259 is the same that we expressed and why we filed House Bill 2257, as that is to ensure that when criminal cases are brought, that they are carefully screened and that we don't waste our precious criminal justice system resources, including our indigent defense resources, on bringing criminal charges, appointing a counsel, when in fact those charges haven't been adequately reviewed and they're not going to be able to go forward on the case. And we thought that involving the district attorneys right from the beginning and asking them to make sure when they file a criminal instrument that there is sufficient grounds that we're not going to be wasting time and money. That's why we put 2259 in with regard to the fish and game. And Mr. Bradley, I'm sorry, I missed your remarks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as I've said before, is that obviously I come from a county in which we don't have a lot of game violations, but Mr. Harkerode was unable to be here today and asked me to be here. And he indicated that, as I said before, is that your game violations are divided into your where they refer to the justice courts, in which what he told me is that does not come out state indigent defense costs, but rather comes from the county.
Right.
And then you have the ones that are referred to the district court, and those are the ones in which you have potential indigent defense costs. The history of review of our office reviewing major traffic cases has been, as I believe, and I think you've had these statistics before you, has been is that we don't issue on about 2% of the cases, and in the cases that we do issue, we tend to, we issue a few higher charges than were originally issued. And that's been our experience on reviewing major traffic offenses. As far as game violations go, as I indicated, that there you have a problem of where the person is cited the person may be cited 90 miles from where the district attorney's office is if they're cited in the justice court. And one of the things is oftentimes people are traveling through the state to hunt, and they come to the state to hunt, they get a game violation, they want to take care of it right away. If you refer this to the district attorney's office, what will happen is those people will be long gone before the matter comes up. And what will happen is in most of those instances, you'll have bench warrants issued. They're not the type of people who are generally going to have game violations. And the District Attorney's Association sees no reason that the district attorneys should be reviewing those because, one, not much will be accomplished. And number two, it's going to create more problems than it will solve. And as I think you know, I believe the District Attorney's Association supported the idea of the major traffic offenses. This is something that we think will, on balance, it's not going to help things.
We don't feel real strongly about the bill, and I don't do a lot of criminal law and hadn't had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Bradley. So it's not our objective to cause problems or create any more costs. Our objective is just reviewing the system, and where we can save money up front, we want to do that. And if this doesn't do it, we've got no problem with letting the bill die.
Appreciate your efforts on behalf of the bar and your efforts, Mr. Bradley.
Thank you.
Don't plan to do anything with that bill today, probably not ever, so get some good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a 10-minute recess and try to come back and before the civil committee starts and work that one little bill that we've got, a 3313. Public hearing on House Bill 3313. I believe we have a gentleman from the DMV that would like to come and give us a couple of comments on what's happening out there in the real world.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carl Kruger representing the Motor Vehicles Division. What I can give you this afternoon are some figures on how effective the current law is. Currently, only 7% of the potential vehicle suspensions are being initiated or sent to the division by the courts. In other words, out of the potential of 23,263 convictions for driving while suspended, driving while revoked, and second offense of DUII, the division received 7% of those, and that I have that figure somewhere here. Well, in 1988, there were 844 vehicle suspension notices sent to the division out of something like a potential of 24,000. I could probably address some of the problems with the law if you're interested.
Could you tell us generally the reason why they're not doing the suspension, although they're mandated by law to do so?
I can tell you some of the reasons that I'm aware of. And it's kind of a complex issue. It involves the cost of picking up the plates. I think it was also alluded to that sometimes affects other family members. What we see at the division, one reason is there's a loophole in that people who might get a vehicle suspension might transfer the title to their vehicle right away or might in fact go out and purchase another vehicle. So there's that issue also of the title being transferred or out of that person's name prior to maybe even going to court.
Questions of the committee? DMV doesn't have any position on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, only that since the law is not, you know, effective, it's costing the division money now. We do follow the law. If we get the notices from the court, we'll send them to the police to have the plates picked up. But that's ineffective too. because that's probably a figure lower than 7% of the police actually picking up the plates when we direct them to, as the law requires.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, anybody else here to testify on House Bill 3313? Okay, committee, Representative Clark had some good suggestions in terms of limiting this and trying to get us down to a small spray shotgun as opposed to a large wide spray, and I don't know if you might have any comments, Representative Clark.
I think I don't.
Would a section, I don't know that we have time to work this one today. Do you think this is what's the committee think? This general notion that we're pushing and trying to give the courts discretion in this area, good idea, bad idea?
Mr. Chair, with due respect to Judge Haberlock, the Medford Municipal Judge, I haven't heard enough yet to convince me that there's a problem out there that needs to be dealt with. There may be, but I would want to hear some more from. I'm not convinced yet.
Helpful to have something from Judge Haberlack as to specifically what the problem is and how we can address it.
Yeah, it would be, and I would also want to hear from people who might have some concerns, perhaps the MAD people, and I would want to. Like I say, I'm just not yet convinced that that this would be a step in the right direction, and in fact, I'm concerned it might be a step in the wrong direction for some reasons.
Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All righty, we're going to close the hearing on House Bill 3313 and close the meeting.